The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. On this Friday morning, we will be doing another edition of Clown Takes. Got kind of an outside-the-box one we're going to lead off with, and then just more on Craig Breslow's comments post-trade deadline. Joining me tonight, I am Terry Cushman, by the way, if it's your first time ever listening. I am from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine. You can also find me on Twitter at CushmanMLB, Terry Talks Socks on Facebook, find us on Instagram and our Substack blog. Just search Bastards of Boston Substack. You can find our in-print content. Joining me tonight from Boca Raton, Florida, by way of Centerville, Massachusetts, Jeremy Schilling. Jeremy, what's going on?
Well, you're promising me an opportunity to rip Breslow apart, so I'm pretty excited for that.
It's open Breslow season on the Bastards of Boston. Also joining us tonight from Broward County, Florida, Nick Diamond. Nick, ready to roast the Red Sox?
Yeah, this is my first clown take, so I'm excited for this one.
Oh, we haven't done this format with you yet.
Yeah, I haven't done this yet.
So. Okay. Yeah, because of all the trade deadline when we were foolishly optimistic we'd get some bold move. That did not happen. So before we do, this is the first time we've done anything like this, but occasionally we get reviewed on Apple Podcast, and we appreciate the reviews. And they help out because the more people that review us, the more visible we are on that app. And it doesn't even matter if they're good reviews or bad reviews. If people are talking about us on Apple Podcasts, it's good for us. But we did happen to get a bad review. It was a 1-star review. People can kind of anonymously post these. So it was Jules1.18 that left the review. And 1-star, this is what he says. This is the title of his review. Why these losers have a platform is beyond my comprehension. Let me just say, we don't have a platform. We built the platform. Okay. For one thing, nothing was handed to us. We built this. So that's number one. He goes on to say in the review, describing Jaron Duran, and he's quoting us here. It's not us, but he thinks it's us apparently. Says, quote, "I don't use this word often, but he's a bum. They proceeded to insult his baseball IQ and called for him to be DFA'd. Now he's an all-star game MVP, and he'd be playing for another team if these idiots had their way. Don't waste your time on these clowns. Literally any other podcast would be better." So here's what happened. None of us called him a bum, and certainly none of us called him to be DFA'd. In what world would you ever DFA Jaron Duran and not fleece whatever team for whatever prospects we want, you know, given the fact that he's got 4 years of control. But where this quote comes from was we were doing Hot Take Tuesday. And for all of you in the audience, I'm sure you've heard dozens of Hot Take Tuesday episodes. We were reading somebody else's hot take. So the person who submitted that hot take, apparently not a Jaron Duran fan, called him a bum, and we responded, and we defended Jaren Duran. He is my favorite player. I am the most negative guy on this podcast, and Jaren Duran is my favorite player on this Red Sox team. So I think he would probably make everybody's top three, just kind of speaking for everyone right now. But that's what happened. So if you're going to leave us a bad review, at least leave us an honest one. Be honest with your bad reviews, because your facts weren't straight. You weren't attributing the exact quotes to the correct people. So, Jeremy, go ahead if you want to respond.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Terry, one thing I say is sometimes when you pose a hypothetical question through the account on Twitter, people think it's speaking for the entirety of the podcast, and it's really not even anything other than you putting an idea out on Twitter so we can engage with people. And I think that's misconstrued. I personally, from my perspective, I don't root for people to fail because I want the organization to be successful. Now, once someone has a track record of sucking, I might point that out. But specific to Duran, and there was a gap in my being on the podcast, and that was included last year when he ascended to the major league level. And he essentially, and we knew this at the time, he was essentially brought into the major leagues to continue to develop. He was not ready. So I don't think anything, people calling to DFA a player at that stage, given that circumstances, given where the team was last year. And again, speaking for me personally, his skill set is so electric. I did nothing but basically build excitement as he continued to develop. So, you know, again, he's misconstruing a hot take, but specific to this player, like, I've been excited for Duran to get to where he is. And now that he's here and he's continuing to get better, I'm a huge fan. I talked about this after the All-Star game. The way he carried himself once he got into that national spotlight, I thought was in a very humble way, thanking certain people in his life, including the organization and his father. He's a likable dude. He's got a great story. We talked about the problem with the t-shirt in Major League Baseball, how he handled that, how he's been completely honest with his mental health and his struggles coming through the system. If you don't like Jaren Duran, then I don't know what to say about you, but that hasn't been anybody on this podcast since I've been back with the program. So that sounds like someone, frankly, with an agenda. They want to hate us. That's fine. I think they chose the wrong platform to hate us on.
Nick.
I don't think there's anything bad you can say about Jaren Duran. I wasn't here at the time when this quote was misinterpreted, but I don't think anyone in their right mind since 2022 or early 2023 has said anything bad about Jaren Duran. He's about to become the first player since 2007, Jimmy Rollins, with 20 home runs, 20 steals, at 20 triples. Hasn't been done since Jimmy Rollins, and before that it was like the 1940s. So Jaren Duran is entering a very prestigious category of players that hasn't really happened since the 1940s. And, you know, anyone who would call for his DFA would be dumb, and this guy is just kind of trying to bash on people for no reason. One thing I want to bring up what Jeremy said was he will bash on players when they do suck. And I want to bring up how this fan base will take exception to real fans bashing on players who actually do suck. If I say somebody sucks, it's not because I hate him. It's because he sucks. At one point in 2022, early 2023, Jaren Duran sucked. So if somebody did say he sucked, at one point it was true. Now it's not. And if they say it sucks now, they deserve to be called out for it. But at one point, Red Sox fans were like, yeah, he doesn't suck, just give him more time. Well, when he was batting 200 with two home runs, he did suck at the time.
So just to expand on, you know, certain Red Sox fans, and I've spoke about this before on the podcast, We're not negative for the sake of being negative. There's no value in us coming on here being a homer, always hoping for the best, ignoring the problems, ignoring the trends. There's no value in that. As content creators, we shouldn't really have a dog in the fight most of the time. We need to be objective. That's why, and when this guy complains about us having a platform, that's how we've built this platform. There's probably four or five other notable Red Sox podcasts, and they're all out-homering each other. They're not objectively giving opinions, making observations like we are. And when we refuse to go full homer, fans are going to get upset. They're going to get upset with us. I mean, I spent all of last night, and perhaps we will on this episode, or I should say we spent all of the trade deadline reaction show, kind of crapping on the trades. They're mediocre. We're not really infinitely better than we were a week ago. And because I point that out, you know, people get upset. If you want to believe that there's a chance we're going to play October baseball, you know, go ahead if it makes you happy. But we're not here to make anyone happy. We're here to keep it real. And that's why we're different. And that's how we win.
So just a little comment and then we can move on. If you're a full homer production on a team that has been as bad as we've been in the last four seasons, you should ask yourself how honest the people that are talking about the team really are. Because this team has been terrible. Management is basically just absent at best, negligent, certainly. There has been a rotation of general managers or director of player personnel. Sam Kennedy is a liar. And the roster on the big league club has fallen short in significant ways that have led to running last place finishes together. So I don't understand why, you know, there's a negative aspect to us being honest about the team. And that's always baffled me, but I'll just leave it at that.
And let me just expand on that real quick. When does losing start to suck? Like, when do you stop defending losing? Because in five out of the last 6 years, you've been in last place. You've been a last place team. That gets old to us. We come on here, we do four shows a week plus the two series preview shows. That's a lot. You know, that's a lot of crap we have to sort through. We're sick of it. Sam Kennedy says we're definitely going to spend money someday. You know, he always promises this bright future. And what I can promise you guys is when we start winning consistently and we have a believable team that can go deep into October, yeah, we'll start saying nice things. And quite frankly, for most of June, this was not a negative podcast. Things were trending up. We didn't know where the ceiling was, but we were feeling it out. We were going along for the ride. We were hoping for a better trade deadline, as we're about to get to, but we didn't get it. We didn't get it. So, and it's been pretty ugly since the All-Star break, with the exception of this Mariners series. So, all right. Does anyone have the Breslow quote up? I can pull it up real quick.
I could paraphrase, but I don't have it up.
Well, I can grab it real quick on the fly. So Breslow said, we gave this quote on the trade deadline reaction show. I've got it right here. I thought I had it right here. That's not the quote. Well, we'll just paraphrase. So Breslow basically said that they set out towards the trade deadline with a shopping list and they got everything they wanted on that shopping list. A right-handed hitter, two or three relievers, as it turned out, and a lefty starting pitcher. And now, according to Breslow, we can focus on the postseason. We can set our sights for the postseason. And before I kick it to Jeremy, that's exactly what the 11th best ranked choice would say in a situation like that. But go ahead.
I mean, the other part of that quote is he said, this team has earned the right for us to be buyers, and that's what we did. What a half-ass attempt at buying. My God. And by the way, I don't know who's creating the shopping list, but I think he's illiterate, because if your goal when you need an impact right-handed bat was to get a guy who's the backup catcher and should only play twice a week is an absolute joke. There was no one talking about the Red Sox need to improve the backup catcher position. So not only do they spin this as we've improved our backup catching position, but that's also our right-handed impact bat. Now, what goes against me is Jansen's hitting. He's got two, I think, multiple hit games already. But that's not what he's been. He's been, I think he came over from the Blue Jays as a 209 hitter incrementally, like just slightly better than McGuire. And the only real difference is that he's right-handed and McGuire's left. But he's a redundancy because Wong, who's your starter, is a right-handed player, and he's really good offensively. So I don't know how that's your impact right-handed bat. It's an absolute joke. And it's disingenuous to suggest that bat is going to create possibilities to add wins we weren't going to get before the deadline. Paxton, okay, is... if you want to say we needed a left-handed pitcher, which we did, you've done that. But you went out and got someone that is at the end of his career. His velocity's been down. He had a high win total, but that was because he was on the Dodgers. You put him on 27 different teams, and he's not winning ball games the way he was pitching. Now, and I said this when it happened because they got Paxton after the Dodgers series, so a week before the deadline or so. I didn't have a problem with the Paxton signing for purposes of depth if you went out and got another impact left-handed arm. But it appears you never even tried to, because you checked the checklist once you got Paxton, which is it's not excusable. So the only thing you did that I think is going to have an impact moving forward is you got two arms in the bullpen, and Sims was good on Wednesday. He came in relief of Bayo and got out of a jam and really set us up to win that game. So far so good there, but the Mariners added Turner, who I wanted, because it complements Smith while we wait for Cassis. And when Smith is DFA'd, when Cassis comes back, Turner still provides flexibility with regards to a spot start at second, playing first, a right-handed bat that's hit in Boston. The Mariners went out and got a Rosarena, who I love. I think he's an absolute electric factory. And I could go on to different teams, but that's just the optics right now are the Mariners, because we just played them. That, to me, is buying at the deadline. Creating an opportunity to bring in big league talent that are going to get you wins that weren't going to be there without those impact players. And the Mariners have a great pitching staff. And I don't know if they're going to get in or not, but adding Turner, adding a Rosarena, strengthened the weakness of that team and showed that fan base and the players on that roster and the people in that clubhouse that the front office and ownership are committed to winning this year. The Red Sox did not do that. They did not do that. They could, if they wanted to, not one top 100 prospect was moved in this trade deadline. We have, and one of you is going to jump on me if I'm wrong, 4-5 top 100 prospects. Someone can step on me if they need to correct me. They're not all going to be impact big leaguers. There had to be a play to go get. I wanted Vlad Jr. I wanted a Rosarena. I mean, and I can go on and on, but they never made that move to get a piece of talent that is going to incrementally move us up the power rankings, you know. And Breslow's comment is so self-absorbed, blind. To say that he was successful when I don't think there's very many people that are agreeing with him is just ridiculous and a continued indictment on management in the front office lying to you, primarily through Sam Kennedy. So that's where I'm at.
Nick.
So technically, Breslow is not lying about checking off his checklist, getting his right-handed bat, his starter, his reliever. But everybody you got was subpar, mediocre at best, and the catcher acquisition was just plain out pretty much stupid unless Connor Wong is going to play 40% games at second base and first base. And I can back that up with looking around with the other AL wildcard or division opponents who added at the deadline. You could just take Paxton, for example. Look at the Orioles, they got Eflin. Eflin's better. Look at the Astros, they got Kikuchi. Kikuchi's better. Look at the, let's say, the Orioles also got Rodgers from the Marlins. Like, they got two starters who's also better than Paxton. Everybody in the AL, or Lorenzen for the Royals, I'd rather have Lorenzen than James Paxton. Everybody who's ahead of you or even behind you got better than you did. So I'm okay with the reliever acquisitions. I think they were fine, but I don't think it's enough. Danny Jansen was an embarrassment of a right-handed bat acquisition. If you get a right-handed bat, you go out there. I know Luis Robert wasn't traded. I know Vlad wasn't traded, but you can go out and get Austin Hayes, which was a crappy reliever who had past success but had a crappy season. Or you could go out and get a right-handed bat like Mark Canha, who was really cheap. Just somebody better than Danny Jansen and fit the position that we needed, a first baseman or a second baseman. The backup catcher just really made no sense. And he is an upgrade over Reese McGuire, but not much. Actually, one more thing. I don't think Breslow even went up to the luxury tax, which was the bare minimum in this deadline. He had to go to the luxury tax, and I don't think he did. I might be wrong, but I do not think he went up to the luxury tax.
He didn't.
I can dig that up here in a minute. I just want to go over some recent trades in previous years. Won't spend a ton of time on it, but Dave Dombrowski, 2016, that was his first full year with the Red Sox, traded for Drew Pomeranz late in the year, gave up our number one pitching prospect, who I don't think ever saw the light of day in the big leagues. I forget his name even, but had some arm issues and just never saw him again. A lot of people remember the bad Drew Pomeranz more than the good Drew Pomeranz, but he was very serviceable in 2016 and was arguably your number two or three starter in 2017. Had an ERA right around three. I think he started game two against the Astros that season. Was very good. And considering what we gave up for him, very serviceable trade. We didn't make a huge splash in 2017, but we did get Eduardo Nunez. And if you think that was like a nothing deal, it really wasn't. In the last 2 months with the Red Sox, he hit .321 with a .353 on base, 8 home runs, 27 runs batted in. That's significant for the last 2 months of the year. And he had a great season. His overall numbers that year, he was with the Giants for the first 4 months, and he was putting up good numbers with them. And then, of course, Nathan Eovaldi, 2018. Just imagine what his career would have been like if he didn't get traded to the Red Sox. I'm sure he would have been a good pitcher, but the Red Sox really boosted him into prominence, especially with that heroic extra innings performance. And he was money that whole postseason, even outside of that appearance. Kyle Schwarber, even Bloom got an impact guy during the one postseason we ended up having in the Bloom era with Kyle Schwarber. So this was by far a dud trade. Go ahead, Jeremy.
For the older generation, people forget in 04, they traded Nomar Garciaparra at the deadline.
For defense.
Like, and they added Cabrera and they added other pieces, but like it's not unheard of to even move on from big league talent to build the balance of the roster. You know, they lost something at shortstop, although Cabrera was unbelievable in that run and had some big hits. But that roster filled out, and you know, there's other ways to do it. You know, and I know we're talking more recent, but I'm old enough to have been an adult during that 04 run. And I mean, I was devastated. I remember where I was standing when I found out. But it was absolutely the right move, and credit to Theo Epstein for having the balls to do it.
And just Schwarber's numbers real quick. In the 2 months he spent with Boston, hit .291, which is high for him. He's usually a .230 guy. With a a .435 on base, .522 slugging. He hit 7 home runs, drove in 18. They moved him around a little bit. He was in the outfield. He was at DH. He was at first. It was kind of ugly. But you know, he
was also hurt. He was not activated right away. Bloom bought really low on him because when he came over, he was on the disabled list and he was not activated, I believe, for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think it was more like a week, but that's correct. And it was either going to be Schwarber or Rizzo. And when we did that podcast, I wanted Rizzo. Like, I was all for Rizzo, and thank goodness it didn't work out because he ended up going to the Yankees, was very lackluster, and Schwarber was a beast for us. So I enjoyed that. And if you want to go back to the Sherrington era, he only went to the postseason one time, got Jake Peavy. That only cost us Jose Iglesias. We had Xander pretty much ready to go. So, you know, that wasn't a very costly trade at all. So many of these executives prior were a lot more savvy, executed a lot better, and none of those trades were painful. None of them were painful. They handled business, and we got exactly what we needed. We didn't get what we needed this time. We got what Breslow thought we needed. And, here's a question for you guys. I put this on Twitter. And it just speaks to my frustration here. Let's say hypothetically the Yankees and the Orioles make no moves, but the Red Sox make the exact same moves that they did end up making. The Yankees and the Orioles are still better, aren't they, without the moves that they made?
The Orioles are for sure. I think we're closer to the Yankees. So I think that's a little less clear, but probably.
I think the Yankees still, even with Rodon struggling, Stroman struggling, I just think you can make the case that those guys turn it around to some degree. And Gerrit Cole, obviously.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So why I'm asking this question, and Nick, you would agree, right?
Yeah, I think the Orioles are definitely better no matter what. I think the Yankees are still better, but I think it's a closer gap. The thing about the Orioles is they have unlimited reinforcements coming up from the minor leagues. If one guy struggles, you can bring up the next. And they can just keep – they've got like 4 or 5 top prospects they can just plug holes with until one of them is really good. So
to that end, Holiday came up today and hit a home run.
Yeah, hit a grand slam. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think the Orioles are definitely better. They have more talent. The Yankees, I mean – you could contain the top two and then you could beat them. So I think they're beatable, but I think they're better.
And that Kobe Mayo kid who apparently has comparable numbers to Devers in the minors. He's on the verge of coming up if they want him to. He plays, I think, corner infield. So they just got an endless stream of talent there.
Actually played against Kobe Mayo and like high school area, so right around here. So in a summer game, he actually hit a home run off me, and I struck him out in the same game. So it was a little oppo, like, change up off the end of the bat that went out like 315 to left field, oppo, and then got him with a change up the bat before. So he kind of adjusted to it, hit one out. So it was kind of cool. He's a good player.
That's going to be a cooler story in a year or two. I struck out that guy. Yeah, that's cool. So the reason I asked that question is because, I mean, I think those teams were better, but now because they've added, the gap is just wider now. The Orioles added two starting pitchers, a fairly solid reliever. He comes out as probably a seventh inning guy. That's Gregory Soto. And maybe they can rekindle some magic with Eloy Jimenez. He'll probably be DHing. I don't know if it's going to be righties or lefties, but that could be a Steve Pierce type move for the Orioles if all goes well. Maybe I'm embellishing there, but
look at the impact that Chisholm has had in New York.
Four home runs in a row.
I would agree. I think Jazz has had the biggest impact on any AL contender so far. Just the fact that he's been able to play second base after not playing it for a year and a half and then go in to play third base, which he's never played. I mean, it's only been like two games, but he hasn't had any problems yet. And if he can come in there and play an adequate third base, I think he's going to be the biggest acquisition. It gives the Yankees some speed. It gives them some defense. It gives them some left-handed power that he can hit 325-foot homers over their right field wall. I think he fits their ballpark well, and as long
as it gives them a pure athlete.
Yeah, and it's somebody that's not Judge and Soto, and he's another decent baseball player out there, and hopefully he can keep his attitude right. I know he's had trouble with Miggy Rojas, and I know Verdugo has had some attitude problems, so I hope everything works out for them, but not really. But
I don't.
Yeah, we'll see.
I hope they fail miserably.
So far, so good for them, and I think that's been the best deadline acquisition just because of his versatility, which I did not expect him to be able to do.
I'm just checking real quick. So he's going to be controllable for the next 2 years beyond this. He is 26 years old, so just now entering his prime. And a lot of people tried to say that Danny Jansen's metrics are as good, if not better. And I guess if you want to cherry pick, fine, go ahead. But Chisholm's an everyday player, and much like Jaron Duran, he's going to impact your team in a lot of different ways. And, you know, Danny Jansen's just a scrap heap guy who's probably going to sign 1 year deals for the rest of his career until he's no longer useful at the major league level. And I think Chisholm's going to be a good player for at least the next 5, 6, 7 years. He's an athletic kid, extremely versatile, about the same versatility as Sadon Rafaela. And I think that was a perfect acquisition for the Yankees. He's hit 17 home runs this year, by the way. I mean, this dude is
he's a really good player.
He is. Yeah, absolutely. So I think the Yankees did a good job. And I think that Mark Leiter deal, if they can just clean him up a little bit, that he's going to be one of the better late inning guys in Major League Baseball. I'm guessing he's probably going to be an eighth inning guy going forward. But Sam Kennedy also just, I don't think he's even trying anymore. You know, in terms of the public relations aspect, today he was quoted as saying, "Sometimes you have to make bad moves or something." Just, I don't know. Nothing good happens if there's a Kennedy around.
Sam Kennedy's a liar. And the only thing I'll say about Breslow in his defense, and he knew what he signed up for, so I'm not defending him. But if I were to play the devil's advocate, and to Nick's point about whether they spent to the cap or not, which they did not do, I have zero doubt that management made it very clear you are not to get touch the cap. And so once that happens, he's already limited, and that probably affected, to use his term, the shopping list. But it's no excuse, whether you want to put it on Breslow, Sam Kennedy. Again, Sam Kennedy is a liar, or management. It's embarrassing that we are a team, a big market team. We pull from six states. The team owns their own network. They have, I don't know, five different major league franchises, unlimited resources. They own the stadium. There's absolutely no reason not to pour resources into this team. It's inexcusable.
Okay, so I meant to look it up earlier. We're closer to the cap than I thought we would be. The luxury tax, or cap, however you want to label it, is $237 million, and we're currently at $231. So, I mean, if you don't take James Paxton, that's another $1.4 million. If you just set the bar higher, go get someone else, that's a little bit more wiggle room. I don't know what Danny Jansen is making on the year, what we had to cover there. I'm guessing not a ton. Let's see, I can pull that up right here. So he is making $5.2 million on the year. So what's a third of that? Probably what, $1.7, $1.8 million, something like that. So that's another. And then we just DFA'd that Trey Wingenter guy that was, he gave up the four runs in the first game of the Mariner series. I think he's only made like three or four appearances, but that was $1.7 million that we didn't have to pick up, and we did, you know? So incrementally, these small things add up, and I think Breslow's way over his head. Ideally, Breslow would have been like the number two in a front office for at least two or three years before he took this job. That's not what he was in Chicago. He was listed as an assistant GM, but it was strictly pitching development. That's all he did. He wasn't in the office when all the wheeling and dealing was going on. And so I don't know. And I think I said this on the previous trade deadline reaction show. I'm already extremely pessimistic for next winter. I don't think there's going to be anything of impact. I think they're going to be obsessing over dollar amounts. You're going to need to make a painful trade, and I don't think they're going to have the balls to execute that. I really don't. So, any more thoughts before we wrap?
None from me, Terry.
The only thing I'll add, like you said, about if you didn't add James Paxton, you might have saved an extra dollar or extra $1 million or two. And then you had $6 million on top to go to the tax. And then if you just didn't get James Paxton, you probably could have got that Jack Flaherty trade done, which they were rumored to be in the final three with the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Dodgers. The Dodgers ended up getting him. But maybe it was a money restriction and not a prospect restriction. Who knows? I think the prospects that the Dodgers put out there were toppable without giving up Roman Anthony, Kyle Teal, or Marcelo Meyer. Like, I think we could have done it without giving up those three. So maybe it was a money restriction and going over for James Paxton, or like you mentioned, Wigenter, whatever the heck his name is, was a big, big deal at this deadline, which was just a stupid move that we did not need his two crappy appearances for. So that's a move that you could criticize Breslow for, that maybe you don't look at the time as a bad move, but when you get down to it, when it comes down to $1.5 million at the deadline and John Henry saying, absolutely, you're not going over the luxury tax, that is a big move if you look at it.
And another thing, I think Zach Eflin only went for the Orioles top. He was there. They gave up their 10th ranked prospect and their 17th ranked prospect, if I'm not mistaken. So that's not even a huge haul for a guy that's not even a rental. I think he's got one more year left of control beyond 2024. So they already have to do one less thing next winter because of that. And that's what I was kind of hoping we would do. Not necessarily with Eflin, but with a controllable starter. And I would have been fine with a, you know, a number three type guy on a decent rotation. That would have been fine too.
Not Priester from the Pirates, who's basically a minor leaguer.
Well, like
that's not a controllable starter. I want a guy with major league success who's pitched well in the majors and actually can contribute this season.
We would have been better off trading for an actual priest, I think, in terms, you know, somebody to say a nice prayer when, I don't know, when we got two runners in scoring position or whatever and you need to play them. But, yeah, I mean, why would Ben Cherington send a guy with significant upside to a team that basically fired him? And I think Cherington had some major constraints going into what ended up being his final year. They wouldn't let him go get Max Scherzer, even though we were positioned to do it. Would have been great, because then we probably wouldn't have got David Price. But yeah, so revisionist history. This is a painful era of Red Sox baseball, and I can't wait for it to end. I can't wait. We thought that would be at the end, after the Bloom era, we thought we were going back to the glory days, but we got Breslow and his fucking, oh man, I did it. swear jar. I am better than everyone with not swearing, and I just dropped it. So I apologize. At least it was the end of the show. If you got any kids in the car, you know, don't talk like Cushman. But yeah. We got Breslow's goddamn shopping list, I think, is the cleaner way to say it. All right. So I guess on that, we will wrap. We'll be back Sunday to talk about what did happen in the Texas Rangers series. I think we'll have Hot Take Tuesday as the secondary show. So stay tuned for those, and everyone have a great weekend. Take care.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. LeafHome.com/water.